Oh, g'day team, welcome to another instalment of Us. It's you, it's me, it's Melissa, it's the whole vibe. It's the whole shooting match, it's the project, that's us. Hi, Melissa.
Hello, good morning, how are you?
Look, I'm good. I'm better than yesterday. I had a big day of stuff yesterday, not much sleep, and then the old head hit the pillow last night and I was just in a coma for about 8 hours. And when I woke up this morning, my cells were rejoicing. They were doing little kind of...
A little happy dance,
a little bit of moonwalking within my skin, a little bit of high-fiving each other. And so you can probably tell I'm looking resplendent and radiant.
Oh, you are looking super radiant. Have you told everybody about you? I think you did with Tiff the other day, didn't you, about your haircut?
Did I?
I could be wrong.
I don't know. Oh, maybe, yeah. Yeah. I cut my hair, everyone. I left the top long-ish. The back was just out of control. It's like, you know, I'm jealous. Like people go, oh, your hair's so good. It's so thick. It's so curly. It's a fucking nightmare. I look like a hedge with glasses. I look like some kind of fucking marsupial in a black T-shirt. It's shit. It's just my hair. Look, what is good about my hair, if there is anything, it's prolific. It's prolific. And that shit grows, right? But it just grows in 74 directions. I get jealous of people whose hair grows and it just flows down their back like some kind of Amazon, some kind of movie character. But mine just grows out, like I said, like some kind of, I don't know, hedge or something that needs trimming.
Wow.
So the sides are short. I'm turning my head right now, which is terrible for audio, just to show Melissa the sides, which are just fucking slick business.
Beautifully blended. Party on the top, slick on the sides.
That's it. Party on the top, party at the front, business at the sides and back. I've got a gig today. I've got to talk today to whoever turns up. So I'm representing Brain Park, which is hilarious. I'm representing Brain Park. How ironic.
Professor Harps.
Definitely not. So which is the part of Monash that I study at, the neuroscience bit. And I'm talking to whoever from the whole University of Monash, whoever turns up. So there could be 7 people or 7,000 people in the audience. That's at 1 p.m. today. We're recording this at 9:39. So as is my way, I've done zero prep, but I think that preparation, I am learning in the academic sense that prep is not a bad thing. Who knew?
Yeah, but this is more in your wheelhouse, isn't it?
This is my wheelhouse, so I can just rock up and freestyle and hopefully share a few thoughts and ideas which resonate. Speaking of thoughts and ideas which resonate, so the other day, we did a little ep called 10 Ideas That Changed My Life. And so that seemed to resonate. And I'd actually done on my list, which is somewhat organized of me to have a list.
Very.
I know. I had 20 thoughts and ideas or 20 ideas that had, when I say changed my life, what I mean by that is that they changed either the way that I thought or the way that I did stuff or the way that I operated on a personal level, on a physiological level for my health, on a business level, on a sociological level, the way that I operated in inverted commas around other humans. And so what I'm about to share is part two. So numbers 11 to 20. But we'll just call them 1 to 10, part 2, 1 to 10. And the things that for me have been helpful and good from the point of view that they taught me how to do life and do communication and relationships and business and health better, but also they taught me a lot about me. And I think one of the biggest challenges in a personal development sense is trying to figure out who we are and how we are and why we are the way we are without, and this is the important bit, without self-loathing, just with self-awareness and honesty. And because sometimes the things that we need to acknowledge about you know, ourselves or the way that we live or talk or do food or do exercise or our lifestyle, sometimes the things that we need to acknowledge to move forward are really uncomfortable and really confronting and make us feel really raw and vulnerable. And none of those things we enjoy in the moment, but nonetheless, that is where the good stuff happens,
yeah.
You know, because we don't need to change our life as much as we need to change ourselves in the middle of our lives so that whatever is going on in our life, and remembering that a lot of what happens to us and around us and in spite of us, we have no control of. So life goes on irrespective of what you want or you expect or you hope. There's an element of life that will always, which is most of it, will always be out of my control, your control, Melissa's control. And it's our ability, I believe, in the middle of all of these memes and thoughts and ideas and the self-help space that get thrown around, in the middle of that, it's really our ability to, as I've said before, step into self-reflection, self-awareness, self-evaluation. How do my behaviors and choices and reality line up with my values? And then most importantly, self-regulation. How do I manage me optimally? Mm-hmm. How do I get the most out of me? So here are my 10 ideas that for me were impactful. As I always say in the copy or the synopsis of the show, this is not a recommendation. This is not a solution to anything necessarily. It's not a prescription and it's not a personal endorsement from me to anyone else. But what it is me sharing out loud in a public space what helped me and what was valuable to me on my journey.
Mm. So just before you jump in, yes, for those that missed episode one, so part one of this, it was episode 632. If you want to have a listen either before or after you listen to this one.
I just had a sip. I love the way that you just are way more comfortable than you used to be to just
push you out the way.
Nah, yeah. Before you start, you chatty fucker. I love that. Feel free to keep doing that. All right. So number one is this. Idea number one. Part two, number one, that changed the way that I did an aspect of my life was the idea, I guess, firstly, the realization that people are probably going to keep doing what they do if previous behavior is a predictor of today's behavior or future behavior. So I was always expecting people to somehow be different today, certain people in my world. So the idea was expecting people to be what they've been. So for example, if someone treated me a certain way, not nicely, most of the previous encounters I've had with them, let's say I had 98 encounters with them and 99 times, they treated me in a way where they belittled me or weren't very nice or they weren't very warm or they weren't very interested or whatever. I'm just giving a very specific example because this has happened to me when I was younger and I would hope that person would be different and every time I would be disappointed. And the reason I was disappointed was not because of their behavior per se, but rather my expectation that their behavior would be different today.
Yeah.
When in reality, my expectation that someone, just because I want it, is going to treat me differently today is all about my hope and what I want rather than who they are and how they are and probably what they're likely to be. So, for example, when you have had a conversation with someone that you love and you are coming from a good place, and I've had this many times, with a lot of people, I'll give one specific example because I've shared it before, but it speaks to this idea of I would talk with my dad ad nauseum over the years, time and time again. Not that he was a train wreck with his health, but it certainly wasn't optimal. So I would talk to dad about all the stuff. You know, he smoked for quite a while and he drank booze. He wasn't a chain smoker, neither was he an alcoholic, but he was doing stuff that wasn't optimal, as do many people, as did I for a while. And I'll talk to him about food. I'll talk to him about drinking water. And I'll talk to him about, you know, working out and all of these things. And he would either be disinterested or fob me off or kind of, yeah, whatever. And I just kept hoping that one day he would be excited about the idea.
Yeah.
And my reason was I loved him and I wanted him to be well.
Of course.
It, you know, it on
it's
a practical
from a good
level.
Place. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And so... So I was always hoping, underlying, I guess, expecting that one day he would go, you know, I'm ready, I got it, blah, blah, blah. And over the end, it just never happened. And I was always disappointed. But I recognized that the disappointment came from my illogical expectation that he would think like me.
Yeah.
And that's a dumb thing to do. It's understandable because you wish someone well, you want the best for them. Now, sometimes people think when I'm saying expect people to be what they've been, that I'm saying they can't change. Well, I'm definitely not saying that. Mm-hmm. Of course, people change. Of course they do. But let's take off the hope hat for a moment and put on the practical hat and go, all right, well, if this person, whatever the issue or the conversation or the thing that we're talking about, whatever the context, if this person behaved about this thing or around this context or challenge or issue, if they behaved a certain way the last 500 times, there's very little chance, even logically and statistically, that today they're going to be different because I want that. Mm. So we hope that people change. We support people to change. We encourage them. We love them. But we don't continually put ourselves through the emotional ringer because we think magically they're going to be different today.
Yes, yes.
Idea number two for today is this, is, and I've spoken about this before, but many times, in fact, but this was transformational for me. And that is that there is no best program. Mm. I grew up paying attention to the magazines and the advertising and the TV stuff and I guess even listening to other people that were always talking about, you know, this is the best way to.
Yep.
This is the best way to burn fat. This is the best way to build muscle. This is the best way to run fast, to improve flexibility. This is the best way to create a phenomenal physique. This is the best way to build a business, to build a brand. This is the best way to be happy. This is, there's basically a million products and services and programs based on the starting point being this is the best way, the yep. being a singular singular kind of construct, the, right? Well, there isn't. There is no best program that works universally. If there was, then we would all know about it. There isn't. And the reason that there isn't and the reason that there can't be is because we are all unique.
Yes.
And even though we have a lot of similarity and overlap, physiologically we are different, emotionally, socially, you know, cognitively, behaviorally, culturally, we are a fucking potpourri of humanity. You know, we're a fucking smorgasbord of issues and bullshit and talent and overthinking and self-doubt and cells and organs. And, you know, we are just... We're all the same and all the different and all different at the same time. So realizing that we can learn, and this is why even with me, when people hang off every word, which is nice, but also at the same time, listen to what I say, but then the things that if you feel so compelled, if you think that there's something that I'm sharing that makes sense to you or is worth trying stepping out of the theory with for you, then have a go at that and see, try that thing. But see then what happens. See how your body responds or your results respond or your mind or your situation or your marriage or your communication style or your business or brand or your internal state, your emotions, your, you know, your happiness, your joy, your pain. Just see. You know, like I've said many times, for me, the best program for me is no drink, no booze, no drugs, no junk food, no boss, no job in inverted commas. I've said all of these things. Now, these work for me, but they would not work for most people because I am not most people.
So
we can learn from, there are certain things we can come to understand. Businesses need, you know, structure and process and accountability, and we need to have a service or a product that people want to buy, right? We can kind of all agree on that stuff. You know, health, well, I need some micronutrients and some macronutrients, vitamins, minerals, protein, fat, carbohydrates. These are non-negotiables. We know that, right? We know that we need sleep, that we need hydration. We know that being stressed all the time doesn't work. So there are certain things that we all know and agree on, but the rest of it, our body will tell us, our heart will tell us, our emotional system will tell us, our nervous system will tell us, our blood pressure will tell us, the accumulation of fat around my stomach will tell me, you know, my sore back will tell me, the shit results that I keep coming up with will tell me, the fact that no one wants to hang around with me will tell me. Like there's always evidence, and we need to pay attention to what's happening and figure out our own best program. Now, number three ties in with number two, and that is the idea that success is personal, not global. Again, this is something I've covered, but that my version of success is not yours, yours is not mine, and that success very much is a story, not a standard. I'll say that again, very much success is a story, our personal story, not a global standard. So for some people, for example, making $1,000 a week would be fucking mind-blowing, life-changing, incredible, almost incomprehensible, right? Comprehensible. Thank you. Put your teeth back in, go again. And but for others, $1,000 a week would not be enough to survive on because of the financial commitments they have, or the 19 kids that they have, or the whatever it is, right? And so it's not like there's a number that equals success. It's not like there's a body fat percentage that equals success. It's not like there's a particular job that equals success. And so success is all about our values, our drivers, our ideas, and what resonates for and connects with us. And so, you know, most of us grow up in a model, a cultural and sociological and family model that tells us we're very much shaped and formed and influenced regarding what success is or what success should be. And success is, you know, I grew up in a version of this. Success is, and this wasn't always overt, but success is getting married, finding a good wife or husband, depending on, you know, your situation, of course, and having a couple of kids, 2.3 kids, probably a station wagon, a good job, good security, good company, 4 weeks holiday a year, you know, make some good dough, make sure you save a bit, and, you know, live your life and then die when you're about 70 or 80. And that was kind of, you know, my paradigm wasn't wildly ambitious. It wasn't you're going to be a fucking rock star or you're going to be an elite athlete. It's like, let's be honest, you're jumbo. So if you fucking, if you just get through it, you little fat fuck, then no, they never said that. But that was a bit, but that was my version, right? I had very low expectations of me because I didn't think a lot of me. And over the years, my understanding of and relationship with and interpretation of success really changed. And this is another interesting thing I hadn't thought of, but I'm going to say it now. And that is, not only is success different for different people, but it's also different for the same person over time. And I've mentioned before, I was out of shape and then I got in shape. And then I got in better shape. And then I got in ridiculous shape. And then I was in really, really, for me, based on my genetics, I was in the best shape of my life, but still nonetheless, I didn't feel successful. I felt like I had, you know, a little bit more muscle to get, a little bit more fat to burn, a little bit more this, a little bit less that, right? And so there's the idea of what we think success will be. And this is really important to pay attention to. And then sometimes we create the idea, we create the result that we wanted, the practical, measurable, physical, financial, whatever it is, result that we went, that is success. Then we get it. Then in the middle of that success scenario, we don't have the experience of success. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. From the outside looking in, he is successful. The inside out experience for him or her is, I am not happy. I don't feel successful. I don't feel fulfilled. I feel lost. I still feel insecure. I still don't sleep great. I'm still an overthinker. I still feel disconnected. I still feel lonely. I still feel anxious despite all of my external representations of success. So I guess what I do want to say around success is for me that it very much became about my internal, not my external world.
Right.
And I grew up in a model that said, Craig, it's about the external. It's about what you have, what you earn, what you own, what you drive, where you live, what you look like, your brand, your business, what people think of you, all of these things that are really externally focused. And I was fortunate enough to be based on where I grew up and the mindset I grew up in. I was very fortunate by the time I was 30 that I was kind of successful in my career and kind of financially going okay. And, you know, and despite all of that apparent success, the experience wasn't there. Mm. So success is not personal. It is not global. Mine is not yours. Yours is not mine. And it's largely a personal interpretation or experience or story that we have, not some universal, global, measurable standard. I will say that before I shut up, because I'm banging on too long about this one, though, that is for most people that I see that are successful, it is significantly more about what's happening within them than without.
Yes.
And we all need to pay the bills and we all need to get around and we all need to put our kids through school and, you know, have stuff to wear and, you know, all those normal things, a meal on the table. Of course we do. But then beyond that is the issue. So my next idea is this, that was revolutionary for me. And that is the idea that we choose our purpose. It's not preordained. It's not predetermined. And also the idea that maybe I don't have a purpose. Maybe I have many purposes, right? Maybe I'm not just meant to do what you're meant to do is help people or what you're meant to do is, you know, enlighten the world with this or whatever. Or maybe what you're meant to do is raise great kids, build a beautiful home and family. Or maybe what you're meant to do is, you know, study theology and spirituality and discover who you are and live in a fucking cave or whatever. Maybe it's a bunch of stuff. And so I think I do not know where that idea came from, but I feel like it came out of some kind of religious construct, which is not terrible, but I've never seen any evidence that we all need to have a purpose, underlined A in brackets, single purpose. And neither have I ever come across any evidence that our purpose is predetermined. Mm. Of course, there are things that are predetermined, like biology or genetics more specifically, but in terms of, you know, for me, I think the purpose of my life, is what I choose to do with that. Now that depending on my choices and who I am and my personality and my ego and all the other Craig variables, it might not be a good purpose. Mm. Not everyone has a noble purpose. You know, everyone's like, oh, what's your purpose? Some people's purpose is to get fucking wildly rich and live in a mansion. And I'm not judging them. I don't think that's, if they're not hurting anyone and they're happy, well, that's a pretty good purpose.
Yep.
You know, if you're good and the people around you are good and you treat people well, but your primary purpose is just to accumulate wealth and then you might get there like some people have got there and go, I've got heaps of money, but I don't, maybe I'll do something bigger than me with it.
Yep. Yep.
You know? So idea number four is that you get to choose your purpose It is not set in stone. It is not predetermined. You don't need to go on some spiritual exploration, in my opinion anyway, trying to look under some spiritual rock to discover it. Oh, fuck, it's over here next to the cactus, behind the yucca,
Brian, at the back of the tuck shop.
Brian, I found my purpose. It's over here. Bring the spiritual shovel so we can dig this shit up.
Brian.
Yeah. Idea number five that kind of was a revelation for me, and simultaneously a revelation, an inspiration, and a total mind fuck, is the idea that there is no is being a present tense verb. There is no past or present. There is only now. Mm. And that life, as we experience it as humans, experience now, not experienced or will experience, but as we experience, is a never-ending series of now moments. Mm. We are never not in the present. It is the present is a continuum. And while we did last week was real, last week was here, it is the term the past is just a term that we use to explain and rationalize in our mind a previous version of right now.
Yes.
A previous installment of the present. Next week, as I've said before, next Wednesday won't be the future. When we get there, it'll just be another now moment. Mm. But that is the way that we construct things and understand things in our mind, is to talk about a future installment or a yet to come installment of now as being the future. And so why does this matter? I think it matters for a multitude of reasons, but for me, it really taught me about not wasting energy. This was my main takeaway, not wasting energy on things that have happened that I can't undo.
Yes.
And things that have not yet happened that maybe never will, because what I did, like many, was I obsessed about, focused on, wasted energy on, got angry about, got frustrated about, talked way too much about, overthought things that were historical, things that happened to me now, or things that didn't go well, or things that I thought were unfair or whatever. Now, we need to be sensitive here because some people have had terrible things happen in their past and we fully acknowledge that. And if that's you, lots of love from me. But for me, remember I'm talking about, for me, and I think for many others, we're recognizing what happened and we're acknowledging this happened and it is shit.
Yes.
It is shit. It shouldn't have happened. And of course, there's a scale. I've really had nothing terrible happen in my life. I'm very fortunate. But it's all relative, isn't it? You know?
Of course. Of course.
And so we're acknowledging what happened, but what we're trying to do is not live in this moment, in a moment that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm.
Because then what we become a prisoner to something that happened in the past. Now, again, I'm just sharing for me. But what I've done is over the years, the stuff that for me was painful, which I fully admit on the scale of pain is wildly insignificant compared to some people's pain and story. But what I do is I try to use that as a catalyst for growth and learning.
Yeah.
And the things that didn't work, the moments of embarrassment and humiliation and rejection and I guess suffering at the hands of people that I loved and trusted who did horrible shit to me and all of those things. And if you ask me truly hand on heart today how I feel about those people, I love them. I want them to do well. I don't love what they did to me. I don't have any urgent desire to have them back in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
On a practical level. Yeah. But I definitely don't think bad things. I don't want them to suffer. I don't hope they fail. And as I've said before, if their future, good or bad, was in my hands, I would definitely choose good.
Yeah.
And one, because I want them to do well.
Yeah.
I recognize people's flaws and humanity. But also it serves me to be bigger than my own bullshit,
to let
which
that
is
go.
Significant.
Yeah. And also, I think you don't invest that much time thinking about that anymore, like thinking about those situations anymore. Is that a conscious thing? Like, did you? Yeah.
Yeah. And I go, well, what's in my control and what's not?
Yeah.
And we won't talk about it at the minute, but like yesterday, I had a not fun thing happen.
Yeah.
I had a couple of challenges and I go, okay. So like, I think with a lot of things, you know, even if something happened 10 minutes ago, it's history. Whether it happened 10 years ago or 10 minutes ago, it's history. Now, all of what I'm saying, of course, is easier said than done, as is every fucking construct in personal growth, right? But the truth is, we're all going to have a moment of emotion or some moments of emotion somewhere between a minute and a month or a year, who knows? But what I do is I think, well, what matters now, especially for me who does this, this is what I do. This is what I talk about. What matters now is how I respond.
Yeah.
So what matters now is what I do. What matters now is where my focus and attention and energy is now, and keeping things in perspective, because life is hurdles. Life is fuck ups. Life is challenges. Life is peaks and troughs and joy and pleasure and pain and ecstasy and tears and laughter. That is life.
Mm.
And that is true for all of us. And then, you know, so every day I get up, and I've said this 10 times on this show, but one of the questions I ask myself every day is, what do I need to get done today? What are my priorities in terms of that list of to do? And then based on that, what's the best use of my time and energy? What do I need to pay attention to? What do I need to focus on? What do I need to put on the old shelf for the moment? And where do I need to invest me today to get done what I want to get done? So at the end of the day, I've been productive and effective. I've had some fun, but also I've ticked the boxes that I needed to tick.
Mm.
So recognizing the past, understanding what it is and what it isn't, acknowledging the future, as we call those things, but recognizing that, you know, living, L-I-V-I-N-G, is a present tense verb. Yes. You can't living in the past and you can't living in the future. You can only be living now. And that fucks with our head because we're so used to our brain and our mind don't work or consider life when we're in it as a continuum of never-endingness of this moment, but it is, And even time itself, 1,440 minutes, 24 hours a day, you know, even that is a construct that we created to create, an operating system for appointments and podcasts.
Structure.
Yeah. And getting shit done and structure and accountability and, you know, I think if I had to meet someone at 4:15 sunrise for coffee, I'd probably fuck it up every day, you know?
Yeah.
So the old iPhone helps.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Number six, which I've spoken about a lot, but again, for me, this was life-changing, was realizing that the idea that I create my own reality, because I used to confuse my situation with my reality.
Mm.
I used to think my situation, my circumstance, my environment, my job, the people around me, I used to think that they were my reality when in fact they affected my reality and interconnected with my reality, but really they were just more part of my external situation and circumstance. And when I say reality here, I'm talking about the internal. I'm talking about what's happening within me. So in the middle of all of the stuff that's happening around me, good and bad, predicted, unpredicted, I'm processing data. My mind is a data processing machine. I'm interpreting things consciously or not. I'm telling stories. And I am, without even thinking about it, I feel like Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor now. I just shut my eyes. I am... Jeez, I love Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor.
How good was her energy?
I crush hard on her. She's a fucking gun. If you haven't heard that episode, go back. She makes me look so fucking average.
Speaking of being present, she was just super present.
She's super present all the time.
Yeah.
I love her. Anyway, back to reality. So reality, as we experience that internal reality of feeling and emotion and fear and anxiety and happiness and joy and creativity and spirituality and expectation and hope and all of those things, internal events, you know, these are things that we create. So for example, a really practical one is if I am in a situation, if I'm in a room with a bunch of people, and let's just say I'm in that room, and in that room, what the actual reality of the situation, not my internal reality, but the reality of the situation is that everyone in that room is nice. Everyone has pretty good intentions. Nobody's wanting to do me in any harm. Nobody's judging me negatively. In fact, nobody's really thinking about me, right? But in the middle of that, now that's the situation.
Mm.
But in the middle of that room, my story is, oh, fuck, I'm with a bunch of strangers and I don't, you know, I'm only here because of that. Oh, I didn't really want to be here, but old mate dragged me along and they're all looking at me because they know I'm not. And I start telling myself a story of I'm not wanted. They're judging me. Or potentially worse, I could be in some kind of danger of being embarrassed or humiliated or discovered as the fucking overwhelming fraud that I am. I'm not smart enough to bet all this shit, right? And let's say none of that's actually true, but I believe it's true, then that becomes my experience. Mm. That becomes my internal reality. And now all of a sudden, the story turns into the emotion, which turns into the biology, which is now I'm stressed.
Yeah.
I'm physically stressed. I'm not physically stressed because the situation determines it or needs it.
Mm.
There is no tiger at the front door or there is no robber in the house with a gun. I don't need my sympathetic nervous system to be going fucking apeshit, but it is because I am doing it.
Yes.
I am doing it. And this is part of, you know, this is a much bigger door to be opened into self-awareness, awareness of self in the moment, equanimity, being the calm in the chaos, a recognition of thoughts, being able to be separate and aware of the separation between myself, S-E-L-F, myself and my thinking, because I am not my thinking, but I am fucking overwhelmingly controlled by my thinking at times, whereas I don't want to be managed by my mind. I want to manage my mind. And when I can learn to manage my mind rather than when I can learn to be in the driver's seat rather than the passenger seat, things go better.
Yeah.
Many people are in the passenger seat and we need to slide across. Number 17, or number seven, I should say, this for me is good because I got a little bit of a profile when I was quite young in my 20s, and I don't think I ever let that get away from me. I don't think, maybe I did. I'm trying to be 100%. I don't know. I don't feel like I had a fat head, but maybe I did have a fat head for a while. And to all those people who encountered my fat head, I'm sorry. But I'm sure there was definitely ego. I don't know. I think sometimes people interpreted me as arrogant, and I may have been, but I think it was more that I was insecure and I was trying so hard not to look insecure.
Right.
But anyway, there was bullshit going on with me. But as I said, you know, I did quite well quite young and I had a good business and a good brand and I was making a few dollars and, you know, you get some attention and you get some accolades and but as for me, this idea and kind of was internally transformational and the idea that I'm not special, the idea that I am one of 8 billion people.
Mm.
And this for me right now in my 50s, this awareness that I'm not special, that I am a grain of sand in a desert of humanity or a drop of water in an ocean of humanity. I fucking love being that drop of water. Yeah. I'm not the ocean. I'm the drop.
Yeah.
And sometimes we think we're the fucking ocean. You know, I'm fucking lint in the belly button of humanity. I'm the fucking, you know, I'm nothing.
That'd be the title of this episode. That's hilarious.
Yeah, can you write it down? Lint in the belly button of humanity. You know, and that is for me, that's just been something that has made me a better person and kept me grounded, and just having that awareness and being cognizant of that idea that I'm, and again, this is not self-loathing because I think I'm a reasonably good person, but I'm not a special person. I'm not gifted. I'm not super smart. I'm not super, all those things I've spoken about, but what I am is, I'm curious and I love humans and I love people and I love learning. I love helping others learn. And, yeah. So for me, that idea, that ever-present awareness that I'm just one of many, and not only am I one of many, but in the context of the 8 billion on this, you know, this beautiful planet that's hurtling through space and time and infinity, you know, I was born into relative privilege because I had a house.
Mm.
I had safety. I had parents who loved me. I had school. I had food. I had a bike. I had friends. You know, it's like most people didn't grow up with that. Yeah. Most people in the world did not grow up with that. So, one, I'm not special, and two, I'm extremely grateful for where I happened to land in this human experience, where I happened to land in this body, having this 80-year physical experience in the quantumness of infinity and everything, you know. Number eight is, and this ties in with the one before, but this only became something, I guess, in the last 10 years where I think I always knew this, having worked with a lot of athletes, but this became more of a resonant idea and a reoccurring idea for me based on the people that I was working with and talking to in a range of contexts, not just sporting. And the idea is that mediocrity could in fact be a gift.
Yes.
I think we did an episode with Jeff Jout quite a while ago called Mediocrity. Yes. is the gift, right? And what I realized was, and I was fortunate enough to be around a lot of people who were very gifted and talented, and to coach them and help them. And also a lot of people who were, I would say, middle of the rung in terms of talent and potential and all of those things. And then also, you know, in a range of settings, people who really, like me, they didn't have heaps of talent. They didn't, you know, they weren't geniuses. They weren't stupid, but they weren't geniuses. They didn't have many resources. They didn't have a genetically gifted start. You know, but what I saw overwhelmingly was that, I'm not going to say overwhelmingly, I'm going to say often. Okay. I often saw that the people who had less to work with were more resilient because they had to be. The people who had less to work with worked harder, had a bigger engine, asked better questions, and could cope with setbacks and what we might call failure or disappointment. They could cope with that better because they'd been trained for it.
Yes.
They were used to it.
Yeah. That was their superpower. Yep.
That was their superpower. I like it. They didn't grow up with things coming easily. And because things didn't come easily, they either needed to capitulate or to step up and show up and do the work and go, well, fuck, this won't be easy, but that's okay. So I think when we say, look, and again, we're not being self-deprecating or we're not being self-loathing, but we just go, okay, so, you know, as a writer, I'm a 3 out of 10, but I want to write books. So how do I get better? Well, by writing. You know, some people are gifted writers. Some people are gifted speakers. Some people are gifted athletes. Some people are, you know, like Jane O'Brien, who I don't know why she popped into my mind, but Jane's done an episode and she's one of my favorite people. And she's got a daughter, I think Holly is her name, who's a fucking amazing artist. Right. And she's just got this incredible gift and she's been an amazing artist, you know, or Dylan, our boy Charcoal by Dylan. You know, I look at the work that Dylan does with charcoal and paper and you could give me 2,000 years and the best coaches in the world. I can never do that shit that he just does with no training.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, you know. But I think for many of us, you know, that are not in terms of, you know, gifts and IQ, we're not super special, and that's all right. Doesn't mean we're bad people at all. But sometimes that base of having to just work is really the best base, because it develops us in a way which is going to serve us moving forward. We're nearly there. We've got two to go. So the second last idea is that, and this came to me early, and you hear a lot of kind of conversation around genetics, and people are like almost, what's the word? Resigned to the fact that their genetics are all determining. Oh, well, that's just my genetics. And look, of course, genetics play a role in how we are and how we function and health and wellness and disease over time, of course. But we also now know really well that our genetics don't need to be all determining. And while I grew up in a body that was genetically not super duper, I realized from a young age that if I modified my thinking and my habits and my behaviors and my operating system around what I was given, that is, if I managed and used and manipulated my genetics in a particular way, I could almost override that predetermined kind of tendency to end up how I would have ended up had I not intervened. So I still have the same genetics, but I have a different operating system. And so what I've learned and what I think is important for all of us to learn is, one, genetics matter. Two, they're not all determining. And three, lifestyle and exercise and sleep and nutrition and managing anxiety and stress and socialization and looking after our gut health and a whole lot of things that we can do can really change the way our genes express themselves over time. So whereas if we had have lived, this is the wrong term, but you'll know what I'm saying, a typical existence, we might have died at 60, but we might end up having 80 or 90 great years because of how we manage what we've been given. So there's genetic disposition, and then there's genetic management, or genetic optimization is perhaps a better term. So let's acknowledge what we've got. These are my genes. That's okay. Now, the better question is, how do I optimize them? And number 20, which is my last one, idea number 20 is that, for me anyway, experiencing new things, doing hard things, doing uncomfortable things, for me, that's always been the best teacher. So I am an experiential learner. And even though I'm in an academic setting at the moment and I've done, you know, undergrad studies and have a degree in exercise science and all of those things, and I can learn that way, but it's not my operator. It's not my optimal operating system for learning. It's great. But most of what I have learned, I've learned doing, and a lot of the doing has been uncomfortable. So how did I learn to stand in front of 1,000 people and be calm? Well, I started, as many of you know, by standing in front of 10 people and being not calm and being anxious and being terrible.
Yeah.
And how did I develop skill and competence and understanding and awareness and calmness or emotional regulation is perhaps a better term, but how did I develop that to be able to do my job today? Well, by experience, by stepping into the doing. And I think, you know, we listen to the good and bad of the You Project is that the good is hopefully that there's lots of great thoughts and ideas and information and stories and inspiration. The bad is that it's only thoughts and ideas and stories and inspiration. Yeah. It's not results, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what, of course, my job, in inverted commas, in this context, is to share stuff that might resonate and connect. But then what really matters from a listener point of view and a transforming point of view is your ability to action things, your ability to do what's required. And it's in the doing of the things. It's in the, all right, well, I don't know where to start, how to start an online business or do an online course or run a marathon or run a 5K or to build some muscle mass or alleviate my back pain or write a book or become a speaker or whatever it is. I don't know where to start, but I'm going to start. I'm going to start. And I'll probably fuck up and fall over, and I'll adapt to course as I go. And that's, but by avoiding the start, we just keep ourselves in a holding pattern that doesn't work for us. So for me, the idea of, or the experience for me of doing new things and stepping into, you know, like when I started my first business at 26, I rented a 1500 square feet space. I spent all the money in the world that I had on equipment. I paid a fortune for insurance. I overpaid for my equipment because I had no business record or financial history, really. I signed a 3-year lease, which for me was terrifying. I dealt with the council. I didn't know what I was doing. I was having conversations I wasn't qualified to be in. I was talking to real estate agents before I leased my space. I felt like a moron because I didn't even know what questions to ask about leasing or how to answer their questions. And then once I actually got the joint going, I don't know how to lead people. I don't know how to administrate a business. I still don't fully understand anatomy and physiology and exercise programming as deep as I need to. There was 1 million fucking things that I had to learn.
Yeah.
And I started out very mediocre at everything, but I just learned. I just kept rolling up my sleeves and having experiences and asking questions and paying attention to results and going, well, that didn't work. I'll try this. Well, that was better. It wasn't perfect, but it was better than A, and B was better. So let's try C. Oh, boom, I nailed it. Now this is the way I know how to do this. But you can't, you know, I believe that learning is about a real internal shift.
Yeah.
Like learning has got to be experiential. There's a difference between memorizing shit for an exam and big learning. Difference.
Yep.
And a lot of people are good at passing exams, but they haven't learned anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I think learning happens in life.
Mm.
I think knowledge acquisition, and by the way, I think classrooms are great. But what I want to know is what you do with your knowledge. What I want to know is how that serves you and benefits you. So experience for me has always been my best teacher, learning by doing. And that'll do, kids. So I encourage you to go and learn by doing and stepping out of the idea and the theory. And if I said one or two things today that resonates or is you, then your challenge is to do something with it. So there you go. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you. That was great.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone. Love you.